So this is our last class. It's only a 6-week session this time, and I'm thinking probably next time we'll also do a 6-week session and not start it until February. So you have some time in between. You might want to go back and read over the material we've covered as a kind of an exercise. You know, the point of reading the TSK books is never so that you can memorize them for a test, you know. I mean, I don't think anybody has that idea, but you know, it's not because you need to get clear on the ideas, although that's part of the process. The point is to see what it's like to experience your world in light of the TSK vision. You know, it's so important that Rinpoche calls this a vision. It's not a theory, it's not a philosophy, it's not I don't know what other options there are. It's a vision. And what that means is that when your vision is transformed, when you can activate a new vision, maybe that's a better way to say it, that is, I don't have a better word than transforming. You know, that makes a very fundamental change in your life. You know, I've been looking lately at some of the things people say about TSK, some of the things we've collected, and people, you know, very often people will say, well, this is, I know this is having a real impact. It's a little bit hard for me to describe what it is. And I think that that's fine. That does seem to be how it impacts people. But it's, you know, it's a question of looking at things from a different angle or a different perspective. And everything looks different. There's an example that comes to my mind, which I might have used in a class sometime, and it's actually hard to describe because it depends on a certain surprise in a movie. I guess I'll say it in the most general terms. I'm thinking of a particular movie, but it's a movie where you see a certain situation. Whoops. You see a certain situation. I'm getting an echo here for some reason. Well, whatever it is, it's gone. I see, Sudaba, that you have a question. Let me just go ahead with this image, and then I will give you that chance. You see a certain situation in the movie, a certain setting, and you see it several times, and then at a certain point, you learn something that changes your perception of the situation completely. And the next time you go into that room and you see the people in that room, everything looks completely different. I guess, you know, it doesn't have to be a movie because I know that's very abstract what I just said. It's as though, you know, you've been working with people, let's say, in a group, and then you learn something about someone in that group, and everybody else knew, but you didn't know. And now when you interact, everything has a different feel. Well, the TSK vision is a little like that. And, you know, it's appropriate to be talking about vision because Rinpoche is saying here that we need to learn with space eyes. So I said all that in terms of what you might be doing during December and January, although we will also have a practice day in December, and I talked about that last time, and you'll get something on the website about that sometime this week, about the exercises or practices to do and a structure. Okay, Sudaba, you have a question that you'd like to ask. But your microphone's not on, according to what I see. Now your microphone is on. Okay, go ahead. Nope, now your microphone's on. Yes?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Chad, I was reading one of the chapters last night before the last night's section.
Right.
And I remembered an example you gave us one of these years. I've been doing this, I think, 2+ years. And you used, I was searching so bad in my repertoire for some examples of if I'm understanding the material right. And I, to mine claim, the example you used in the plane, you were in the plane and you saw a soda
right.
pouring backward.
Right, right.
And I wondered if that example was appropriate regarding staying open in the present regarding the field communique. So there's many, many, many possibilities, and that would cause or allow the access to the time, which is all three sections with the infinity sign that is talked in the material, the past, the future, and the present. And if you could, using that example, I think I'm getting it, but I'm not certain, or I don't have confidence, and I want to know if just by staying open regarding the horizons of possibilities, that would in fact do that.
Right. Okay. So the example that I used, I remember the one that Sudhi is talking about, was one time very early in my TSK studies. I was on a plane flight, and the stewardess spilled a drink in the aisle. It was being spilled. And what I saw was very clearly, I saw that little event happening backwards in time. I saw the, you know, the way you see it when you see a movie that's run backwards. It was just a moment. But I definitely saw it that way. In one way, I wouldn't stress that example too much, because people get a little fascinated by the idea of, oh, you know, what if I could live my life backwards or saw things backwards? Or people get fascinated by things that are really out of the ordinary. And that was out of the ordinary. I haven't had so many experiences like that with TSK where something happens that just doesn't obey the usual laws of physics. And if you're thinking that that's what's going to happen, you know, I think you will set up a kind of a grasping or craving for that, which is not necessarily so helpful. It is a good example in the sense that, you know, let's look at it in terms of the reading today. At a point in this chapter, Rinpoche talks about the mystery, that space kind of shows up as the mystery within appearance. And he says we've lost the capacity to appreciate the significance of that mystery. We take everything for granted. And I always like that phrase, because it's like something has been granted, something has been given to us, and we take it. And we don't question it, you know, we just accept it the way it's been granted to us. We take it for granted. And an experience like the one I described with that drink on the airplane makes you realize that the way we take things for granted is not the only way they have to be. And that is perhaps the value of that particular example. It's probably more valuable, I don't want to make judgments, but you know, as I say, you don't want to start hoping that you're going to have non-standard kinds of experiences. Ordinary experience, if you look at it with space eyes, as Rinpoche says, is has this quality of wonder within it, this quality of great mystery. And discovering that, discovering that substance is not what it appears to be, or more precisely, I mean, that's the way we would usually say that in English. In TSK terms, you'd say substance is exactly what it appears to be, and nothing more. It's just an appearance. And finding a way into that openness so that what appears in the ordinary standard view of reality is just an appearance that may set up the possibilities for other ways of appearing, other non-standard ways of appearing. That's the way Rinpoche describes that possibility in the first TSK book. It may set that up, but simply the awareness that appearance is only appearance, and that it's knowable, and that's what we want to talk about today, is enough. You know, that's seeing with space eyes instead of seeing with form eyes. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to start this discussion by making a kind of philosophical point, or by making the point that we're going to focus on in philosophical terms. And then, you know, it's not only a question of philosophy, but it seems to me a useful place to start. So the usual understanding is that there's the appearance of things, and the appearance is points back to what really is true. You know, appearance can be deceiving or it can be accurate. And somehow we have to be able to tell the difference between the two. But whatever appears points back to an underlying substance. So the philosopher who made that into a cornerstone of his philosophy, with really important consequences for modern thought, but we don't have to go into that, was Immanuel Kant. And Kant makes this distinction between what he calls the phenomenal and the noumenal. And in our terms, that's really almost exactly the same as appearance and substance. Not quite, but almost. More, yeah, almost. So the phenomenal is what appears. And Kant says all that we can know is appearance. He says underneath that there's something that we can't know that generates the appearance somehow, and he calls that the noumenal. And, you know, in our terms, we call that substance. Substance is a more ordinary word, and that's both good and bad, but Kant, in making the philosophical points, calls it the noumenal. He says we can never know the noumenal. There's always a mystery, and our knowledge is incomplete. So what Rinpoche does in TSK is, I think he's making kind of a similar distinction, especially here in this chapter, between appearance and substance. And he makes the point that people say, you know, we can't really know substance, the Kantian point. But really, he turns it around the other way. He says that since there's only appearance, everything is knowable because appearance appears. And in its very nature, what appears in space is knowable. And that point is a really important point. And I think, you know, I mentioned in the orientation for this week that one drawback to the way we've been approaching this material is we do it just one little chunk at a time. We're reading half a chapter at a time or a chapter at a time, and we may lose sight of the underlying connections or the way that the presentation is developing. And in this case, the key point, when you say that whatever appears is knowable, and you say, well, why should that be? Couldn't something appear that's not knowable? Well, there's two answers to that. One is kind of, you could say, logical, I guess. If something appears, you at least, you know, you know the appearance, right? For something to appear means that it's showed up. It's made itself known. It's made itself available. And in that sense, the answer is, well, of course it's knowable. But the second point is that, and it's, I guess this is another way of making the same point, is that space allows knowledge to appear. You know, we live in a world, let's call it a space world, or we could call it the field communique, but in any event, we live in a world that is knowable. And it's not only knowable, like it's capable of being known, but it's a world that by definition is being known. right? Knowledge is operating in this world. And usually we don't think of knowledge as connected with the space in which things appear. But that's where the field communique comes into play. The point that Rinpoche makes in his earlier discussion of the field communique is that we know we are given a world that is communicated to us. You know, appearance is itself a kind of communique, and things are communicated in a certain way. They could be communicated very differently. That's the idea of, or the possibility of, non-standard appearance. But just in appearing, knowledge is active, and what appears in space, therefore, embodies knowledge. And so it's just the opposite of the point that Kant makes. In a way, it's similar, because, you know, Kant says there's this great mystery underlying appearance. It's so mysterious that we can't even know what it is. You know, we can't say anything about it. It's just the unknowable, right? And Rinpoche says there is no underlying noumenal reality that can't be known. But there is a great mystery. And you know, in this chapter he talks about the great mystery, so you can see the kind of connection. The great mystery in this case is the space that allows appearance to appear. And space is the name that Rinpoche gives to, and for good reason, but unless someone has a question, I think it's kind of straightforward, so I won't go into it. Space is... space communicates appearance, and it communicates the knowledge that knows that appearance. And you could say, because that's part of what's communicated in the field of the field communique, it communicates the one that knows, it communicates the self. All of that is what's going on, right? And all of that is potentially knowable, and that's why it's so important. You know, it's not that we want to get clear about is everything appearance, or is there this underlying reality that we can't know, or you know, we don't need to be smart on that level. We want to activate a different kind of knowing, and so Rinpoche has set up this distinction now, or he's trying to clarify this distinction, where he says space is what allows the field communique. The field communique, through the field communique, very different kinds of appearance manifest or appear, and all of that points back towards space as what does that allowing. And the question is, how can we come to know space? Or how can we see, as he says, how can we see with space eyes? Right? Everything potentially is knowable. And if we could activate that kind of knowing, which we do through coming to... By allowing space to appear, that's what Rinpoche says in this chapter. If we could do that, that would have a fundamental effect on our lives. You know, that is the vision, you could say, of the time-space knowledge vision, that reality can be very different once we understand these different structures. That everything is appearance. That, you know, as Rinpoche says later in this chapter, nothing has ever taken form. That the communique manifests this appearance, so that knowledge is inherent in space, and that we do have a possibility of making space appear. And that's what Rinpoche says we really need to do, right? We need to make space appear. Now, one of the things that Rinpoche says is that we've lost sight of this mystery. Let me see if I can find that, because I wasn't really planning on this, but I'm thinking maybe it would be a good idea to actually, if try to reflect on this in a way. Let's see. Let's see. So there's a section in the chapter called Space is the Central Mystery. Okay, he says, at the bottom of page 31, the last full paragraph, he says, the mystery of appearance can be phrased in many ways. There's the fundamental question of why anything appears at all, rather than nothing. There's the nature of the mechanism that allows appearing, as well as the nature of the creative force responsible for setting the mechanism in operation. There's the conflict between the active and ever-shifting arising of appearance on the one hand, and the fixed identity of what is and what can be known on the other. And there are other places in the chapter, on the next page, when Rinpoche talks about the manifold mysteries of appearance. He's, down at the bottom of page 32, he says, we encounter space unknownness, which is maybe another way of talking about the mystery, in the relationships that space allows, from big and small and in and out, to the interplay of subject and object and body and mind. It may even be available in the mystery of our limitations, the constrictions and confinements that we accept as intrinsic to the ways we live. So there's a whole set of mysteries there. And what Rinpoche says, again back at the bottom of page 31, is that, you know, we don't know how to deal with those. We don't know how to let their mystery inspire us or move us or engage us. When we try to ask a question about how things appear, we draw a blank. That's the phrase Rinpoche uses. You know, we ask the question. And then typically, you know, we say, well, I don't even know how to ask that question. You know, it just goes blank. And so we say, well, okay, I give up. there is a potential for activating that mystery. And maybe we should take a couple of minutes to do that, because I'd like people to feel a little involved in this. You know, it's like, exactly the wrong way to present this material is for me to kind of explain it. You know, the right way is for you to engage it. And of course, I have to assume that as we talk about these things, or as I talk about them, that they're kind of reverberating in you. If not, if you're taking good notes and hoping that maybe they'll reverberate later, well, maybe that's okay. But at some point, it has to come alive within you. So I'd like to do that. Before we do, let me just look at another question that Sudaba asks. Is that the way sages are able to access teachings, knowings in the cave that the original teachings have taken place? I think if I understand correctly, you're asking about, you know, the space, the kind of physical space, like you go to a cave where someone has meditated, and you meditate there, and is there a power in that? Yeah. And traditionally it's said that there is, absolutely. Well, that raises a lot of really interesting questions, but I don't think we can go into them here. That kind of space, the kind of physical space, and the idea that someone by his presence in a cave, let's say, 300 years ago, imprinted that physical space with a kind of knowledge that becomes accessible, you know, that suggests operating according to a very different field communique, let's put it that way. And that seems to me quite possible, but not something for us to go into here. So what I'd like to do is take a couple of minutes to see, you know, see what happens if you try to reflect on the mysteries that of what appears in space. These different examples that I was just reading you, you know, starting perhaps with the idea that, you know, the question that philosophers have often asked, why is there something instead of nothing? That's one place to start, but many different places. So, you know, you may draw a blank, but that's okay. Let's try for a couple of minutes, and then people can perhaps report on their experience. Okay? We'll do that. Okay. So I'm going to give people a chance to ask questions or to do that in, perhaps in the chat area or by speaking up. Rinpoche does say that we really have to become aware of that kind of fundamental mystery. At the top of page 32, he says, we ask these questions, and he says, buried under the assumptions we pronounce as we make sense of the world, such questions, the kinds of questions I was reading about, such questions usually lack the power to awaken in us a sense of the fundamental mystery they proclaim. Now we must evoke and activate this mystery. Otherwise, our inquiry will exhaust its power without effect, bound to the level of concepts and ideas. And that is pretty much the point that I was trying to make at the outset about the TSK vision. If it's a question of concepts and ideas, it doesn't have the power. It doesn't have the power to change our world. We need to change our world through a kind of awakening and bringing alive. And of course, the TSK exercises, which we haven't focused on too much in the course, that's what they're for. So let's take a look at a couple of comments that people have made. So because Sudaba's is giving a couple of, is doing it in pieces, let's look at Tina's. She says, I used to have a problem with space. I always did very well with time. But what Rinpoche states is that working with one will open the other, and I've found that to be true. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I always thought that space was the easiest. But then over the years, time has opened up for me. And Rinpoche does talk about that. If you're interested, it's at the beginning in the preface to Love of Knowledge. He says, some people find one facet of the vision easier and others are drawn to another, but eventually they all kind of support each other. And it's actually true that when I was looking just now, when I was doing this little practice, I found myself thinking of space in terms of time. I was actually thinking, before I came here for this session, I was at home, and that was being in one space, and now I'm in another space, and what made that possible was that I moved through time. But that's a very puzzling thing, how that works. That's puzzling is not quite as strong as mysterious, but it did, it's a question I've asked myself before, but it is a real mystery. Let's go back to Sudaba, who says, let's see, trusting mystery is scary. Yeah, that's very interesting. The we do have a reluctance to ask certain kinds of questions, and that may not manifest for everybody as being scary or frightening. It may manifest as being confused, something Rinpoche describes in different places, or being bored, or just drawing a blank. There are many ways in many reactions we have that are kind of emotional reactions that are meant to hold out the mystery. I think that's exactly right. I happened to be reading something yesterday for another class. That talks about Freud's view of consciousness. And of course, Freud was working on a psychological level. It's a different level, but what he said seemed to me to be relevant at every level. He said that consciousness, purpose of consciousness is to shut certain things out. You could say the purpose of consciousness is to be kind of the guardian of the field communique. And It has many ways of shutting out other possibilities, and mystery is in effect the appearance of another possibility within the field communique, right? A possibility that hasn't yet been integrated. So Sudhava goes on to say that the comfort of the known goes out the door, and the door opens to aliveness. Yeah. Okay. So Michael says, there's no something as opposed to nothing. Something is nothing. Otherwise, something would collapse. Well, that's interesting. Something as only something, even with distance separating its various modules, would have no field in which to appear. Okay, so something depends on the field of nothing in which to appear. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. And, the question is not so much is that a nice formulation, but does it point towards some other aspect in experience that we would like to be able to investigate? Tina, commenting on what I said about moving from one place to another through time, says that the time I moved through was also space. That's probably true. I didn't investigate that or have a sense of that, but I wouldn't be surprised. And Brigitte, okay, Brigitte says everything becomes more permeable, a water-like quality, which is, I think, very good. I'm glad to see people are commenting here. It's nice. Yeah, a water-like quality. That's interesting. I'm having a little eye problem right now. It's not a big deal, but I've been thinking of going to the doctor. And as I was driving down here this morning, I noticed that with the eye where I have a problem, I was actually seeing double, which and I haven't really ever had the experience of seeing double. It wasn't very dramatic. I mainly noticed it with traffic lights. But in a way, the seeing double wasn't so, it wasn't so much that, it was that everything was kind of watery and blurry. And in the middle of that, there was also a bit of a seeing double. And I think that that water-like quality, it's not that we want things to be out of focus or watery, but if you think kind of, I guess the way to think about that is there's appearance, and then there's what we usually think of as the substance of appearance. And we're very committed to the idea that underneath the appearance is the substance. But if that substance becomes more watery, more flowing, then that's, heading in the direction of appearance only, which I think is very important. Okay. So David gives a kind of phenomenological report. At first, input from the senses, then the movement of impressions and patterns, the senses trigger. Then, as I calmed down more, there was more space. Appearance was less insistent, condensed, or urgent. Some dreamlike appearance arose and passed, and I wondered why and what triggered it. Had no idea. Yeah, that having no idea, that's the mystery, right? So the mystery manifests in many different ways. It's partly that we can't account for what happens next. The mind goes its own way. We have no control over it. And that, too, is a part of the mystery, you could say, of the field communique. The mystery of space appearance that we're looking at here is mostly being directed toward the appearance of substance. So, how does substance appear and how do things appear in relationship to one another and why is it that anything appears at all? Those are all questions that normally you'd relate those to the physical world, reality in that sense, matter. But the mysteries multiply. The mysteries are manifold. And David is reporting more on his kind of inner experience. He goes from the input from the senses, which would be more the material world, and then how that gets processed, the impressions and patterns that the senses trigger, and then you know, by focusing on that, he says, appearance becomes less insistent, condensed, or urgent. And I do think that those are good words for, you know, what appearance, what the world that we expect to appear, what that's like. Insistent, condensed, and urgent. I think that's right. Okay. Brigitte says, space and appearance equally alive. Well, you know, I think that's very good. It's not like, you know, I'm not here to say, oh, this was a good experience and this was a bad experience, or you did it right or you did it wrong. But I am here to say that you know, when these fundamental questions about space, appearance, reality, substance, you know, they're like actors on the stage, and they have their roles to play. And when the roles shift, when the plot, you know, of the play shifts, that's a good thing, because it allows the kind of underlying mechanism and structure and the underlying knowledge that to appear, and that's really where we're headed. Sudhi has some advice for, I mean, Tina has some advice for Sudhi. And Bruce says, let's see, objects seem mysterious because they seem to have aspects in reserve, yeah, behind their appearance at any given time. They seem to be more than what they are for me, in that it seems that objects are inexhaustible sources of knowledge and seem to exceed what I can ever know of them. Right. That is, you know, that's the claim that substance makes, and it goes back on a very different level. It goes back to what David said about, you know, appearance being insistent and condensed and urgent. You know, things that appear say, in effect, they say, I'm much more than my appearance. You know, that is the claim of substance. The response to that claim, and you know, whether this works for you, I'm not sure. The response to that claim is that claim to substance is part of what appears. You know? The claim that says, I'm much more than my appearance, that appears. That's what there is, you know. I'm going to leave it at that. So, okay. Yeah, flowing, moving quality. And Ari says, the knowing of what we know, which is our ordinary state of mind, creates an unease, which we can label as a suffering quality, as opposed to the mystery, which feels much more alive and joyful, etc. Yeah, our ordinary state of mind, the knowing of what we know. I'm not sure whether you're saying, Ari, and we're not going to have any time to get into it today, but maybe online. Are you saying that our ordinary state of mind creates unease, or that knowing that we know with our ordinary state of mind creates an unease? I think maybe more the former, because that knowing that we know seems to lead in the direction of the mystery, and you describe that as being more alive and joyful. And Bruce says something interesting, and I think we will have to stop with that, and I'll make a short closing statement. But Bruce says, through TSK, I've long experienced a sense of openness and transparency to objects, but now objects are seeming more elusive, appearing and hiding at once. Likely I'm being influenced momentarily, or that is by now, by Heidegger and object-oriented ontology, my current reading materials. So I'm not sure, I don't know what object-oriented ontology is. Maybe you could post something about that on the web. I think the idea of objects being elusive and hiding themselves is, you know, that strikes me as accurate in a lot of ways. And I don't know that it's in conflict with the sense of openness and transparency, but you know, it would be interesting to hear more from you. Okay. We are going to stop for today and for this course. We'll have our practice session on December 15th, and I'll post something, I think probably this week, It'll basically be a reminder of the practices we've been doing as we go along in this course, and possibly adding one or two more. And the idea that being that on the practice day, and the actual practice day would be December 14th, we would set aside as much time as we can to do these practices, in light of the reading, in light of the course, and then come together on the 15th to discuss that. Rinpoche says in this chapter, at one point, he says, well, we're not necessarily able at this point to go into depth. This is on page 33. He's just made the statement that appearance never takes form, and that therefore each appearance fills the whole of space. We haven't gone into that, and I find that, that's a challenging statement, I think. But he then immediately says, we are not yet ready to explore this way of seeing in depth, but we can at least invite a sense of its significance. So we're in kind of an intermediate stage here, but opening to this mystery and looking back at the various ways we've been exploring space and appearance, those are the ways to invite a sense of significance. And then we'll move on. And I'm just going to, since Michael did ask a final question, we'll stop with that. He says, believing about a teaching that it offers more than we initially or ever can personally know, is that like attributing substance to appearance? That's a very nice point. That's a nice way to close, actually, because, if you're saying at this, if some part of you at least is saying at this point, I don't know about this TSK, it just seems so complicated and difficult, and I'm not sure I really understand or making any progress. That is kind of like saying that's attributing a certain substance to what appears. What appears can include the mystery of what is not understood, but at the level of appearance. That those kinds of problems, saying, oh, I don't understand this, those don't appear. Or let me put it this way. If that reaction appears, then it's just more appearance. That too is not substance. Okay, let's stop there. Thank you very much,
Can you
everybody.
clarify the
Okay.
dates? You said 17 and 18 at one point, and today you said 24th.
No, I didn't say the 24th, for the practice session. I thought I said the 14th and 15th. I will try to open my calendar and confirm that. Let's see. The calendar. No, so it's not the 14th and 15th, I was wrong. It's the 17th and 18th.
Thank you.
Yes. So the 18th is when we will meet online, as we usually do. And the 17th is the practice day. Okay, thanks. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye.